Chapter 47. Front of the building. Drawing up into itself all the rays of afternoon light, it hung there like the visible symbol of the race's glory. Archer knew that Madame Olenska lived in a square near one of the avenues radiating from the Invalides, and he had pictured the quarter as quiet and almost obscure, forgetting the central splendor that lit it up. Now, by some queer process of association, that golden light became for him the pervading illumination in which he lived. For nearly 30 years, her life, of which he knew so strangely little, had been spent in this rich atmosphere that he already felt to be too dense, and yet too stimulating for his lungs. He thought of the theaters she must have been to, the pictures she must have looked at, the sober and splendid old houses she must have frequented, the people she must have talked with, the incessant stir of ideas, curiosities, images, and associations thrown out by an intensely social race in a setting of immemorial manners, and suddenly he remembered the young Frenchman who had once said to him, "H, good conversation, there is nothing like it, is there?" Archer had not seen M. Riviere, or heard of him, for nearly 30 years, and that fact gave the measure of his ignorance of Madame Olenska's existence. More than half a lifetime divided them, and as he had spent the long interval among people he did not know, in a society he, but faintly guessed at, in conditions he would never wholly understand. During that time he had been living with his youthful memory of her, but as he had doubtless had other and more tangible companionship. Perhaps she too had kept her memory of him as something apart. But if as he had, it must have been like a relic in a small dim chapel, where there was not time to pray every day. They had crossed the Place des Invalides, and were walking down one of the thoroughfares flanking the building. It was a quiet quarter after all, in spite of its splendor and its history, and the fact gave one an idea of the riches Paris had to draw on, since such scenes as this were left to the few and the indifferent. The day was fading into a soft sunshot haze, pricked here and there by a yellow electric light, and passers were rare in the little square into which they had turned. Dallas stopped again, and looked up. "It must be here," he said, slipping his arm through his father's with a movement from which Archer's shyness did not shrink, and they stood together looking up at the house. It was a modern building, without distinctive character, but many-windowed, and pleasantly balconied up its wide cream-colored front. On one of the upper balconies, which hung well above the rounded tops of the horse chestnuts in the square, the awnings were still lowered, as though the sun had just left it. "I wonder which floor," Dallas conjectured. And moving toward the porte-cochere he put his head into the porter's lodge, and came back to say, "E5. It must be the one with the awnings." Archer remained motionless, gazing at the upper windows, as if the end of their pilgrimage had been attained. "I say, you know, it's nearly 6, his son at length reminded him. The father glanced away at an empty bench under the trees. "I believe I'll sit there a moment," he said. "Why aren't you well?" his son exclaimed. "Oh, perfectly. But I should like you, please, to go up without me." Dallas paused before him, visibly bewildered. I say, Dad. Do you mean you won't come up at all?"
"I don't know," said Archer slowly. "If you don't, she won't understand."
"Go, my boy, perhaps I shall follow you." Dallas gave him a long look through the twilight. "But what on earth shall I say?"
"My dear fellow, don't you always know what to say?" his father rejoined with a smile.
"Very well. I shall say you're old-fashioned, and prefer walking up the 5 flights, because you don't like lifts." His father smiled again.
"I'm old-fashioned. That's enough."
Dallas looked at him again, and then, with an incredulous gesture, passed out of sight under the vaulted doorway. Archer sat down on the bench, and continued to gaze at the awninged balcony. He calculated the time it would take his son to be carried up in the lift to the 5th floor, to ring the bell, and be admitted to the hall, and then ushered into the drawing room.
He pictured Dallas entering that room with his quick assured step and his delightful smile, and wondered if the people were right who said that his boy took after him. Then he tried to see the persons already in the room, for probably at that sociable hour there would be more than one, and among them a dark lady, pale and dark, who would look up quickly, half rise, and hold out a long thin hand with three rings on it. Dot dot dot. He thought she would be sitting in a sofa corner near the fire, with azaleas banked behind her on a table. "It's more real to me here than if I went up," he suddenly heard himself say, and the fear lest that last shadow of reality should lose its edge kept him rooted to his seat as the minutes succeeded each other. He sat for a long time on the bench in the thickening dusk, his eyes never turning from the balcony. At length the light shone through the windows, and a moment later a manservant came out on the balcony, drew up the awnings, and closed the shutters. At that, as if it had been the signal he waited for, Newland Archer got up slowly, and walked back alone to his hotel. A note on the text, "The Age of Innocence," first appeared in four large installments in the Pictorial Review, from July to October 1920. It was published that same year in book form by D. Appleton and Company in New York and in London. Wharton made extensive stylistic, punctuation, and spelling changes and revisions between the serial and book publication, and more than 30 subsequent changes were made after the second impression of the book edition had been run off. This authoritative text is reprinted from the Library of America edition of novels by Edith Wharton, and is based on the sixth impression of the first edition, which incorporates the last set of extensive revisions that are obviously authorial. End of the Project Gutenberg. A text of The Age of Innocence by Wharton. A Geno by Gutenberg edition.